Zorn, the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, we sing the praises of Zorn.
It's been a couple of weeks since our friend Eric Zorn has been here. He's been on the road a little bit, and I wanted to ask you, I know last week you were in West Virginia, all right? I've never been to West Virginia, but my question is this about West Virginia. It's kind of at the epicenter of the discussion about coal, about the coal industry. What is the attitude right now politically in West Virginia? Are they all just sitting on pins and needles hoping that the coal industry is what it used to be? Or have they moved on or what?
I think the realists in West Virginia realize that what's really hampered employment in the coal industry has been automation, and it's not environmental regulations that, you know, two things have really, really hurt coal production. One is automation. They can mine much more coal with far fewer people. And the other is that natural gas is cheaper these days.
Mm-hmm.
So those two things have really hurt the coal industry. You're not going to be able to browbeat the coal industry into coming back. And people are comparing this to Trump's effort to revive Photomat,
mm-hmm.
or Blockbuster Video. These things aren't going to come back. We sort of moved on. But there are a few things around the edges they can do. But basically, no. It's still Trump country down there. I wasn't down there taking the political pulse. We were down there seeing my son perform. The times that we've spent more time down there, it was pretty much a quick weekend visit. I remember before the election, there were all Trump signs everywhere we went, Trump signs. And I saw one Hillary sign. I said, oh, wow, cool, Hillary sign. And I get closer and it was Hillary for prison. So West Virginia is not Trump country. And it's interesting, or it's not Clinton country, it is Trump country. It's very interesting that its senator is a Democrat.
Yeah.
And that's actually his governor's a Democrat, too. But they're very conservative Democrats. Joe Manchin is the senator, and he is one of the few senators so far who has peeled off and said that he's not going to vote, or he's not going to vote to filibuster the Supreme Court nomination of Neil Gorsuch. So he's one of the conservative Democrats who is not going to filibuster.
Somebody ran both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton's speeches just prior to the election talking about coal. And Donald Trump's speech was just peppered with he gave the impression that if you were to drive through West Virginia, which you just did, it would just be in every direction. It would be people who were unemployed just hoping and praying that the coal industry comes back to save their state, where Hillary Clinton said point blank in her speech, we're not bringing coal back. We're not going to spend any time worrying about coal. That's just not in our plan.
Yeah, and of course, Hillary Clinton was being very realistic about that.
Yeah.
And Trump was being dishonest, I think. I mean, in terms of telling these people that those jobs are coming back. No, they're not. What you have to do with those people is you have to find other jobs for them in alternative energies, other kinds of employment. You're not going to do that in West Virginia. It's just one of these sort of false promises. And ultimately, this is going to erode his popularity in these parts of the country. But then the next person who comes along and promises something big is going to be the one who's going to catch their imagination.
Right.
Honestly, I do think that the Democrats, if they reach out to people in the working class, they're going to have more success next time around.
Yeah.
But
the point in all this, in the comparison of the two speeches, was to say that West Virginia ended up being something of a swing state, and Donald Trump's dream was realized. All these people who were just sitting there going, we're out of work, what can you do for us? He painted this beautiful picture of what he was going to do, whereas Hillary Clinton made no qualms.
Right.
No, I'm not spending any time on that.
I think that happened more in Pennsylvania and Ohio, which were closer calls. I don't think anyone ever really thought that Hillary Clinton was going to take West Virginia, but what was happening there was kind of a bellwether of what happened in those more industrial Midwest states that had traditionally gone Democratic. So it's beautiful country down there and wonderful musical culture that we were
that you got to enjoy.
So your son
played where? Where was he?
He was playing at a place called Tamarack in Beckley, West Virginia. They had a concert there.
Oh, nice.
And it's really, really fun to see him. So anyway, and a long drive, though, and didn't make it back in time. I kept telling Johanna, we got to make it. Come on.
How long a ride?
She was like, it's about 12 hours in the car from Beckley. So.
Yeah.
So we were in the car a long time.
I can't make it past 2 hours in the car.
But with your kid, you know, I mean, you got to go down and see.
Right, 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 right.
Yeah. So. Oh, absolutely.
Let's talk about something you wrote about the other day, which is the Enquirer, one of our finest newspapers, the National Enquirer, and their death watch.
Well, I've been watching the Enquirer's covers for a long time, and I'll take a photo of it when I'm shopping, and I'll put it on my Facebook page just to, you know, entertain people with what kind of crazy things they're saying. And the Enquirer has – interesting thing about the Enquirer is that, you know, years ago it was just it was basically trash, but it did some incredible scoop reporting. It was the only one that found the picture of Elvis, or they had the picture of Elvis in the casket.
Right.
It was the one that led the coverage on Gary Hart, exposing Gary Hart, I believe, with Jesse Jackson's
love child,
as they say, they were, and their O.J. Simpson coverage was so good and so much ahead of the regular media. People were saying that they might be in line for a Pulitzer. But
think about that. Think about what you just said.
But one of the things that is, I mean, it's an erratic publication for sure, and it's really gone all in for Trump, which was why I've been paying more attention to it. But I just went online and I found all these covers that predicted the deaths of celebrities. And here are some headlines that I found.
All right.
May 2009, Oprah Winfrey, or this is Oprah, only 3 years to live.
Oh.
Exclamation mark. August 2009, Kirstie Alley, only 4 years to live.
Why? Because she put on weight?
She put on weight, yeah. Or you know, Angelina Jolie is the other one who is...
She looked sickly for a while.
Constantly dying. They're saying they've had like 5 or 6 covers on her. She's 41 years old, and she's, you know, she's... You know, but looks at times very thin, but they keep saying how many weeks she's got, years she's got to live. Hillary Clinton, 6 months to live, and that was in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
October 2014, O.J. Simpson, 4 weeks to live. August 2012, Macaulay Culkin, 6 months to live. December 2014, Cher, 3 months to live. September 2015, Burt Reynolds, 98 pounds and dying, the end, exclamation.
Wow.
When was that? Because I remember that cover.
September 2015. It was Burt Reynolds. He was carrying walking a cane.
Now, one of them also put, because this one caught my attention, and I don't know if it was the Enquirer or a similar paper, Burt Reynolds, his final days, as if it was very ambiguous, meaning what were his final days like, or are these about to be his final days?
Right.
But he's still very much with us.
He's still very much with us. Michael Douglas, 3 months to live in February 2016. Last November, Chevy Chase, 3 months to live.
Mm.
I mean, they keep forecasting the death. And the thing is, like, we're all dying, right? I mean, I say in this column, I say, well, Angelina Jolie, she's going to die someday. Hopefully it's a long time from now. She's 41. But to be constantly predicting the deaths of
incorrectly
people.
Incorrectly predicting.
And, of course, they were right. They were right about Patrick Swayze. And, you know, there are a couple of them. I mean, the thing
but,
is...
But when they put that about Patrick Swayze, he was already doing... I remember both Patrick Swayze and Michael Landon were two celebrities that came out and said, I have a disease that's killing me. I'm not going to last much longer. So those papers kind of were piggybacking off of what those celebrities were already saying.
Wasn't breaking news.
Yeah. Not at all.
Well, and another one, I didn't find one. Well, they have Cher here, 2014, but Cher is, you know, this is Cher's last Christmas. And stuff
her
like
farewell
that.
Tour.
No, it was her farewell tour, not her farewell Christmas.
And things like, I then went online and looked at some of these celebrities, like Michael Douglas, whose death they predicted. And, you know, he's like, he's doing this interview on some TV station, and he's, you know, he's traveling around. It's just bizarre. And if people are drawn to this, like, oh my God, he's dying, and they grab it. And the reason this became really relevant to me was that Time Magazine did an interview with Donald Trump about a week and a half ago, and in this, they were challenging him about his falsehoods, basically. And they said, "So, well, what about this thing where you said in May 2016, right before the Indiana primary, you said Ted Cruz's father was with Lee Harvey Oswald prior to Oswald being shot. That was reported," said Trump. "Nobody talks about it. What was he doing with Lee Harvey Oswald shortly before the shooting? It's horrible," he said. And, you know, Time confronted him about this, and Trump said, "Well, that was in a newspaper," he said. "I was referring to a newspaper. A Ted Cruz article referred to a newspaper story that had a picture of Ted Cruz, his father, and Lee Harvey Oswald having breakfast. And this newspaper, of course, spoiler alert, was the May 2nd, 2016 National Enquirer."
Oops.
And it featured these screaming headlines, you know, Ted Cruz, father linked to the JFK assassination. And it looks like some of Trump's information about this bugging scandal, this alleged surveillance.
Which has been misproven.
They have not been able to get any evidence that shows that the Obama administration was wiretapping or surveilling the Trump transition team yet. And I don't think they're going to. But some of this stuff seems to be coming from the Enquirer. The Enquirer is flogging this story as well. And when you've got a president who is looking to the National Enquirer for facts. And so that's why I wanted to bring up all this. I mean, this paper will kind of say anything to get you to buy it, and people apparently still do.
If you're a celebrity and you're mentioned in there with some regularity, if you're Angelina Jolie or you're Cher, do you have any legal recourse at all when they put stories like this? Because couldn't you say, this is hurting my career? You know, people want to hire me, but they can't hire me because they see in the paper that I only have 4 months to live.
Generally, yes, you certainly could file suit about that. I think that they have had a poor record. Celebrities have had a bad record in recovering from them because they will defend themselves and they get into these long negotiations. And ultimately, I think what sometimes will happen is that they will come to an agreement and the celebrity will cooperate in some nicer kind of story where it'll show them in a better light.
Yeah.
But you very rarely hear about someone successfully suing the Enquirer.
Does the Enquirer bracket itself more as entertainment as opposed to news, or do they play under the guise that they are a newspaper?
They do a lot more politics. Yeah. I mean, I don't know where they fall. I mean, they consider themselves a newspaper, and they say that they have First Amendment protection. The interesting thing, years ago, I used to date an Enquirer reporter.
Was your wife angry about that?
Well, she was not real happy about it.
Did you make the front page?
It was well before we met, and it was a short-lived sort of summer semi-romance when I was in Florida while working for the Miami Herald, and she was based up in Lantana, which is where the Enquirer is. But she worked really, really hard, and she was going. I was impressed at the time at the attention to detail.
Yeah.
And she would actually go to places. She would go, hang around in hospitals and interview people, and have to have all these sources. And she would describe to me these fights she'd have with her editor, like that's not good enough sourcing. And from that experience, I really got this sense that the Enquirer was a fairly serious.
But you know what the Enquirer does, and similar papers to the Enquirer that regular news doesn't do, is they always say, a friend is quoted as saying,
right,
or somebody close to it says, they don't name the source, they just say somebody around the story is quoted as saying.
Right.
But they don't say who that person is.
Right. Yeah, well, that's how they do it. That's how they get
but
away
now,
with it.
But now, we all laughed at TMZ for quite some time that it was, crazy news, and they've broken the print story, a bunch of things they're on top of.
These places do, because people call them and tell them, and a lot of the information they have is good. So.
Yeah. Eric Zorn is here. If you want to chime in, we're at 312-981-7200. We'll pick this up in just a moment. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill. It's Wendy. It's Eric Zorn in to visit us. Welcome back, by the way.
Thanks.
You got a couple of minutes here, Eric. So how do we want to wrap up today?
Well, I collect tweets online. We have a Twitter poll every week. And when we were doing this a different day of the week, I was having you guys vote on the best tweets. But I thought I'd read some of the best tweets from March. And then we'll run out of time. And I'm not going to attribute them. I'm going to send an email to Kevin. He can put it on your Facebook page.
Oh, okay.
Who said them, so go faster.
Good.
Okay. There's so much going on, but I still make time to dislike Gwyneth Paltrow.
Was that my tweet?
Was that from Chris Martin?
Women are so confusing. One day they say they love hummus, and the next day they say it's a bad birthday present. Aliens in 2017. Take us to anyone but your leader. Son, your insistence on dismembering all of your siblings is tearing this family apart.
Whoa.
Whatever doesn't kill you, we'll probably try again soon. You can tell you're a guy with too many ponytails if you have one ponytail. The scariest part about U.S. tensions with North Korea is the unpredictable narcissistic leader with nukes. I also worry about Kim Jong-un.
Funny.
It's possible the man who looked over at my plate and said, wow, you ordered a lot of food, meant well, but there's no way to know as he is dead now.
I love Twitter. I
told
really
my
do.
Kids the tooth fairy broke a leg in a messy bedroom recently and is now afraid of clutter. That should buy me at least an extra day. And here's the last one. Don't think of it as rolling back environmental protections and destroying the earth. Think of it as creating respiratory therapy.
Oh, dogs. Very funny. So, very, very
those
funny.
Those are the top tweets from the month of March.
Excellent. So. Do you get the same excitement that I get, and Wendy gets to some extent, for the opening of baseball season? The Cubs started last night. The White Sox start today.
It was very cool last night. Parked in front of the TV, watched the whole stupid game.
Yeah.
It was actually a really fun game. And I'm excited about the game tonight, the NCAA championship.
Should be a good one. I don't know if you saw this or paid as much attention as I did, but yesterday during the Cubs-Cardinals game, they put this box up through most of the latter part of the game which shows you probabilities of the Cubs winning and the Cardinals winning. And into the ninth inning, just before the game-tying home run, the Cubs had a 6% chance of winning the game, the Cardinals a 94% chance, but then all of a sudden that three-run home run happens and all bets are off.
I've seen that graphic. I see it often in football, and yeah, the one that's the most dramatic was the Falcons at the in the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl. The Patriots had something like a 0.01% right, chance of winning at one point in the fourth quarter, and mm-hmm, and so they pulled it out. One thing about last night's game, if you have it on tape, there's an image of a guy with a pizza box on his head, protecting himself from the rain.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Tribune reporter Michael Hawthorne.
Oh, good idea.
TV space.
Will he market them now?
I think so. I think it's his big break. So,
but don't you become, it almost transform you into being 11 or 12 years old again, opening day, because every team is in it. There's nobody who's been eliminated, and there's hope. And this year was weird because coming off of a World Series, I felt it a bit with the White Sox 2 years ago. You just go, wow, we could win another World Series, two back to back. It's that great.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. But it's also kind of the stakes. Last time we sat in front of a Cub game, the stakes were so high.
Sure.
It was so exciting. And last night it was like, I hope they win, but they lost. Yeah. I didn't curse and turn off the TV. I said, well, it's one game. They're going to lose.
It stinks when they lose a home opener.
They'll lose at least 50 games this year, even if they have a terrific season. So it's going to happen. But yeah, it's a great time of year.
Yep, it is. Eric, thanks. I appreciate it. Great to see you again.
See you next week, unless I'm off somewhere else.
All right. Take care. We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has next. Stay here, Bill and Wendy, WGN.